This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, September 24th, the There's No Such Thing as a Polite 3-Year-Old edition. I'm Jamila Lemieux, a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding parenting column, and host of Slate's The Kids Are Asleep late night chat show, and mom to Naima, who is 7, and we live in Los Angeles, California.
I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family travel blog, Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom to 3 littles, Henry 8, Oliver 6, and Teddy 3, and I'm located in Navarre, Florida.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie. I'm a journalist and the podcaster behind Crime Writers On. I live in New Hampshire. My kids are Henry, who is 19, Teddy, who is 17, and my stepdaughter Lily, who is 20.
Rebecca, it is so good, as always, to have you back on the show this week.
I'm excited. I'm really excited. It's always fun to come back.
It's always fun to have you back. And this is a perfect show for you to be here. And I'm not outnumbered by the traditional family having folks. We have a question from a mother who, quote unquote, feels like less of a parent now that she shares 50-50 custody of her daughter due to a separation. And we also have a question about getting a 3-nager to be polite, as if there is such a thing.
Question answered.
And as always, we have triumphs and fails and recommendations. Let's start with you, Rebecca. Do you have a triumph or a fail for your return to the show this week?
I've got a triumph. And this is, for me, one of the huge benefits of my working at home situation. I've been working at home like a lot of other people for about 6 months. And it looks like I'm going to have another 6 months at least of working at home ahead of me, as my day job office is not opening until March. So like a lot of other people, I spent the first few months in a sort of weird alternative version of reality where I just ate anything that I wanted at any time of day, sort of worked 20 hours a day because it was right there in front of me and I could, watched all kinds of TV all the time, and just overall felt like crappy, like this unending cycle of just being at home. But in the last month or so, I have unlocked something that it just didn't occur to me before, which is that the huge upside of working at home is all the time we now have to take care of personal crap that we don't have when we're in our offices. So, for instance, I've been catching up on medical appointments that I've been like way behind on. I refinanced my student loans because I had the time to like research the, you know, different places and the different rates. My husband and I refinanced our mortgage because I had the time because I was at home to pull together all the pieces of paperwork. But this is the most important and triumphant thing that I'm most excited about, because it's one of those things that's been hanging over my head like a cloud for really since my divorce in 2008. In the process of one of the other very boring things that I was able to get done, downloading all my estimation of benefits from my insurance company and submitting them to like my FSA and all that stuff, I actually looked at my benefits, which I've never done because I've never had time when I've been at the office. And I discovered that my job has a legal services benefit, which some of you who are listening might have and might not know it. I was like, I'm going to go on this website and like see what legal services I can get with this stupid insurance that apparently I've been paying for and haven't been using. And I discovered that I could get a will done by a local lawyer and it would be covered by this insurance. So I now have an appointment with a trust and estates attorney to do a will, which Kevin, my husband, and I have never had the entire time we've been married, which everyone will tell you is like the worst thing you can possibly do to your family if something happens to you, to have nothing. And that's how we've been living. And I've been feeling awful about it because my ex-husband was always super organized. We always had that stuff in place or whatever. And now, because of our stay-at-home situation, I have been able to make the appointment. We're going to do it by Zoom. I know I'm going to have time to pull all the documentation together. So my triumph is, after 10 years of this hanging like a dark cloud over my head, COVID is enabling me to finally be an adult and get a will at this point in time. So I'm very excited about that.
That is a huge triumph. And I will say, as someone who hasn't had a regular 9-to-5, like with benefits and an office, since 2018, we had tons of stuff like that that I wouldn't have been able to tell you about, that I never would have accessed because I was always at the office. No. But like, the work from home lifestyle and just how like going to the doctor at least like once a week or every other week is just part of it, and it's normal and it's okay and you don't have to ask. Like, I'm happy that more people are getting to access that.
It's fantastic. You just put things on your Outlook calendar, the one that people see at your office.
Yes.
You block off that time. Nobody bothers you, and you can use it for whatever you want to use it for. And it's not like you're not still working all of your stuff, but you just don't have to think about like, oh, I can't do it at 2. I'm fully now embracing that. I'm seeing it as like a huge upside and benefit of this. And it's really changed sort of my outlook on everything. So I recommend it.
That's awesome. What about you, Elizabeth? Triumph or fail this week?
I have a fail. Oliver is in like all of this therapy. And before the pandemic, we switched therapists. Like, one of the people he does occupational therapy with was leaving, and so we got a new person. But then, of course, all of that was online. And if you have tried like online physical therapy or occupational therapy, it is like terrible because I have to be there and like do all the things, but I don't know what I'm doing. They've like worked out a system where we can go back, and he's in a bunch of therapy. So it's like I drop him off and then I pick him up a couple hours later. So it used to be that I would get to talk to each therapist, you know, before we left. But now I just get this like piece of paper that says kind of how the day went, and whoever he met with last, I actually get to physically talk with. And the new occupational therapist, every time the sheet comes back, it is like he is, you know, just rolling his eyes, like not being able to sit properly, like all of these things. The other therapists do not have this problem. And we talk about it and we're working on that. Now, some of the reason he's in some of these therapies are for some of these reasons, like not being able to sit still or totally know where his body is. But it just seems like he's having all these problems with this one therapist. And I am stuck in this place where I'm like trying to work on the behaviors with Oliver, but also I'm wondering if this is like not a good fit. But I never want to be the person that is sort of like the therapist is the problem, not the child. I don't necessarily know that that's the problem, but it definitely seems like we're in some kind of bad fit. And I'm not sure that he can get help in the way he needs it from a therapist that is like annoyed by some of the behaviors that we need help for. Yeah. So we're just in this like bad cycle. I really don't know what to do because I'm not really able to see her or chat with her very much given COVID. And I feel like normally this could be resolved with like a human conversation, but those are hard to come by. So I don't know. My fail for the week is kind of this indecision of figuring out how to move forward with this. He clearly needs the therapy and needs help, but it's a big place. So I think we could probably ask for a switch, but then that also leads to all these like scheduling changes. And I feel sort of lucky that we've got them all lined up in order. Like, that's convenient for me. I'm not going there 3 or 4 times a week, hauling all the other kids to like sit in the car with me while we have someone in therapy. So I don't know. I'm just stuck in indecision world and not sure how to move forward next or what to do.
I don't think that's a fail so much as it is just a challenge before you.
I also think that when I hear someone say, I don't want to be the kind of parent who ... it means you should totally do it. It means you should totally say, I don't think this is a good fit. Because everyone knows you're not that person. If you're even the person who thinks that, like, no one's thinking you're the squeaky wheel parent. I promise they're not. Just say, ask the therapist, say, is this not
that's
a great
a
fit?
Very
I bet
good
you'll
point.
Be so relieved.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That is true. Like, she's probably feeling it too, right? She clearly has not enjoyed being roared at by Oliver because she writes it on the list every week. No, I know. Rebecca, you're absolutely right. That's what I need to do. But I, in some sense, don't want to do it, right? but I will.
Yeah.
There's an internal voice. And I think it's one that a lot of us are extra sensitive to from white women, you know? And I think that for you, like, I can see, because you're conscientious about how you move in the world, you being even more sensitive to, like, well, I don't want to be that, you know, I don't want to be Karen. I don't want to be that mom, you know, it's like all of that at once. But I'm telling you, like, I agree with Rebecca. If this person is, like, not having a great time with your child, she's going to be over the moon to hear that she won't have to. And even if she decides to push back, even if she's like, no, I'm just the one who can, you know, I can fix this somehow. I'm just not going to like the process. Like, you have every right to say, well, on our end, it's not a good fit. So, you know, we would feel more comfortable if we tried something else, or we'd like to maybe see someone else. And if things are the same, you know, we can come back. But, you know, that hasn't been our experience here thus far. So
it's not us. It's you.
You guys are so right. Yeah, exactly.
You don't want him to need therapy from the therapy.
Hopefully I'll report that I just did it.
Yes, you will. I know you'll do it. I'll text you and bug you about it.
What about you, Jamila? What do you have going on this week?
I've got a fail. Thanks for asking. I mentioned last week, or maybe the week prior, that in anticipation of this move, so I'm moving across town next week, and as my lovely co-host can see, at the very least, the inside of my closet where I'm recording is not packed. And that is a hint for what the rest of the house is looking like. But a lot of packing has been done, just not most of it. Anyway, but what I have been obsessing over for weeks, even before I'd signed a lease, wallpaper and paint. You know, I do like the paint choices for the most part I made in this apartment. I don't like the space. And so I'm trying to create a space that I love, somewhere we can live for, you know. I really don't want to move again. I need this to be like where we stay until I buy something or get married. You know, like, I'd like for the next move to be a significant one. This needs to be the apartment she remembers. Like, oh yeah, we were there for a while. You know, like, this is it for a minute. You know, I'm obsessed with creating, you know, not perfect home, but the best imaginable home, you know, and I really like the apartment too. So I've got a great palette, you know, more space than before. Decided to do like a wallpaper accent wall essentially in every room, and then paint, but not just paint. I was going to do, you know, like the baseboards and the crown molding and the ceiling, and, you know, they would be different colors. Like, there's no white walls in this place, right? And there's a lot of walls in there. And so all these weeks of researching, and finally I settle on some wallpaper for the main rooms or whatever. I had one job, which was to ensure that I ordered enough wallpaper. And fell short by one panel in my daughter's room, because she has two walls that are wallpapered and a pink cheetah print. I am a cheetah girl. My homegirls are cheetah girls. And we are, you know, ushering her into the animal print lifestyle. You don't have to wait until you're 60. You know, like, you don't have to wait till you're 40. You just animal print from day one. We've always.
You don't have to be Italian.
You don't have to be Italian. You don't have to be Black. Like, there are a few groups that Polish people also enjoy a good sheet of print. Like, we have these things in common. Really, any ethnic group represented in Chicago, you are part sheet of print somewhere in you. we love our sheet of print. So I want my daughter to have that, you know, even though she's being raised in L.A. Two great pink cheetah print walls, and then, you know, paint on the other walls. So we're one panel short, essentially, like one, like top to bottom, right? Like
one strip. Yeah. Yeah.
And you would think I know the vernacular by now after all. When I tell you, if you type in W in my phone, like every possible wallpaper source on the entire internet, I have searched on my phone and or my computer. And so it's like, okay, that sucks, especially because it took a while to get it. But fine, I'll order some more. Oh, it's out of stock. Ugh. Okay, fine. I'd ordered it from Wayfair. I do the out of stock alert thing. You know, typically that their things seem to come back around every so often, even though it's going to be super annoying to look at this panel. But then I'm like, no, maybe I can find it elsewhere because so many of the other ones are on other sites. Through my digging, I've come to find that this color is discontinued.
Oh.
It no longer exists. I basically took the last of it. I might have gotten the end. And so it's fine. Like, I'm going to do a little accent corner thing. You know, it's not the worst. An accent corner. Maybe I'll do chalk.
I have an idea. Do you mind if I float this by you?
Yes, no.
This came
I love
from a
it.
Solution I employed in my house after my son punched a hole in his wall in a fit of anger. I bought these hexagonal felt squares that you can use as like pinboard. But what's mm-hmm. cool because they're hexagonal is you can hang them up like in a style where they sort of like trail off on one area. So mm-hmm. they don't have to be like perfectly straight. Mm-hmm. You could make like an art thing out of that corner of the room with like some hexagonal felt squares in like complementary colors. You know, you can have like pink or and cream and whatever, yeah. and it can sort of spill onto both walls and look super intentional.
That is cute. I like that.
I'll send you a link.
Hey, please do. Thank you. I like that. We're going to get creative in that corner. I'm like, it has to be fun. Like, it can't be. What's the point? Maybe it's either just a whole new color. I don't know. Or chalk. Or hexagonal.
Hire a muralist to copy the wallpaper exactly in that one spot.
I had thought about trying to order. I was like, that's going to cost so much money. I'm going to feel like such a jackass, or I'm just not going to do it. So yeah, that's my fail, but it's fine. The place is coming together.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Talking about money can be so hard, especially when the person you're talking to is still learning how to do long division. That's why Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace, is here to help. I'm Bridget, and with my fellow co-host Ryan, we help teach your little ones about complex topics like bankruptcy, climate change, and why there's so much gold at Fort Knox, and so much more. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, before we get into these listener questions, let's handle a little business. Be sure to tune in tonight, Thursday, September 24th, to my Slate Live show, The Kids Are Asleep. I'll be joined by Melanie Russell Newsman, the Senior Vice President of Communications and Culture at the Planned Parenthood Federation of America. And we're going to be chatting about the fight to protect access to safe and legal abortion, the critical role of Black women in the reproductive justice movement, and much more. Don't miss it. Tune in at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. We'll have links to Slate's YouTube and Facebook page in the show notes. And you can also watch previous episodes using those links. So please check it out. To keep up with all of Slate's great parenting content and shows, sign up for Slate's parenting newsletter. It's a fun personal email from Dan, remember him, every week. Plus, it's the best place to be notified about Ask a Teacher, Care and Feeding, The Kids Are Asleep, and yes, even Mom and Dad Are Fighting. So please do us a solid, do yourselves a favor, and sign up at slate.com/parenting email. Want even more great parenting advice? Join our parenting group on Facebook. It's super active and it's moderated, so it doesn't get out of control. Just search for Slate Parenting on Facebook. In Slate Plus, we'll be reflecting on the legacy of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the late Supreme Court justice who passed away last week at the age of 87. Here's a quick sneak peek of what you'll hear if you have Slate Plus.
The other thing that always astonished me, and the thing that she like didn't love talking about, and this is what I loved about her, was that she was always one of these women who sort of put, you know, who I am is my work, and was kind of like no bullshit about taking questions or responding to questions about like, how do you do it all? How are you like a woman and mm-hmm. a mother and a Supreme Court? She was just like, that's a sexist yeah. question.
To hear segments like that and to get ad-free versions of our podcast, please sign up for Slate Plus. It's just $35 for your first year, and it's a great way to support all your favorite Slate shows, and you won't hit a paywall on the site, so you can keep up with all of Slate's important journalism. So if you'd like to support Mom and Dad Are Fighting, go to slate.com/momanddadplus and join Slate Plus today. All right, let's get into our first listener question. As always, it's being read by Shasha Leonard.
Are there any 50-50 parents who can relate? My ex and I have been separated since October, but I just moved into my own place, and we started 50-50 custody with our 4-year-old daughter, 2255. She seems to be adjusting well, but I can't shake the sadness. I feel like less of a parent. For example, I dropped her off at her dad's the other night and she was sleeping. It crushed me to pass her to her dad when it felt like the motherly thing to do would have been to bring her home and put her to bed. There have been a couple moments like that. My first long stretch without her, I basically drowned my sorrows with wine and selling Sunset. I'm also thinking a lot about how this works long term. So, parents who have been at it a while, how does it work? Eventually, I could see my daughter not wanting to make so many transitions. Can an arrangement like this really work for adolescents and teens? Maybe I'm just getting way ahead of myself.
Okay, Rebecca, I'm dying to hear what you have to say about this because you have lived this life much longer than I have. And I will say, even though we didn't shift to 50-50 until Naima was 7, but she's been back and forth her whole life. But that 50-50 shift terrified me for everything that the letter writer is saying here.
Hmm. Yeah, I started doing 50-50 custody when my kids were 4 and 6. So I relate to this a lot. And of course, my kids are 17 and 19. Actually, my 17-year-old will be 18 in January. So has been a long-term lifestyle for me. First off, congratulations on being able to watch the high art that is Selling Sunset. It is the greatest piece of media that has become popular in 2020 for myriad reasons, which I can discuss on a different Slate podcast if they invite me to do so. Second, one word of warning I just want to tip your way, because while this wasn't necessarily my experience, I've seen it happen again and again with a lot of my friends who have separated or gotten divorced, which is to do your very best to cope with these feelings and work through them on your own and not bring your 4-year-old into the conversation, because what you don't want to have happen is a 4-year-old feeling like she is responsible for how you feel as a mother. It is not her job to make you feel better about missing her, about missing the special time. You need to solely focus on being positive about the ways that she's being supported. And if she seems like this is working for her on many occasions, like, support that, be positive about it, because the bottom line is this is her reality now. It's not going to change back. And the thing that you don't want to do is have her feel obligated to, every time she reunites with you, tell you how much she missed you, because she's feeling like she's feeding your needs. So do your best as you're working through this to try not to involve her in this conversation. Okay, so here's the advice that I'm going to give you. There is a point, I promise you, at which you will come to find yourself being a better mother because you don't have your kids 100% of the time. It sounds counterintuitive. I know you feel right now this like hole in your home, this hole in your heart, this hole in your time. That time is a gift. You have to view it this way, because you will come to at some point and you'd rather just like lessen the amount of guilt that you feel working there. At some point, I promise you, you will feel like that time is a gift and that the time with your daughter is a gift. This took me a little while to get to, but when I finally got there, and I realized, you know, I have my kids every other week. We did 7 days on, 7 days off from the beginning. So I had a whole week without my 4-year-old and my 6-year-old. And it felt, you know, I felt gutted. I felt empty. I felt purposeless. And then I remembered, oh, man, I am a whole person in addition to being a parent. And this time that I have now to watch Selling Sunset, to re sort of establish my friendships with people that have waned because we had small children or I had small children, to advance my career. I ended up going back to school. I started my career in public radio shortly after my divorce because I found myself, instead of with a hole where a 4 and a 6-year-old were, the space and time to really focus on being the kind of adult that my kids could look up to and depend on even more so than they had before. The flip side of this is that I really found myself embracing, you know, there's this stereotype of like weekend parents, like the weekend dad who, like, I had one of these growing up, like we saw him on the weekends and he would always take us to like amusement parks and bowling alleys and it was perfect and amazing. Yeah, that's not cool. But what is cool is understanding that when you're not with your kid all the time, that it can be a deliberate choice to have a better time with your kid when you have your kid, that you can, for instance, be more thoughtful about family meals. You can be more mindful about how you're spending your time, the hills you're choosing to die on, the things you're choosing to be strict about that might be arbitrary, because you do find yourself thinking, how can I make the most of this 2 days, of this 5 days? That is a great place to start. Start imagining the times that you are not with your daughter as a gift, as something you didn't have before that you have now, and just act as if that's the case, because eventually you will feel that way. And act as if it's the case that the time you are spending with your daughter, it shouldn't be magical, but it can be deeper. It can be more meaningful. It can be more thoughtful. And you can actually focus more on being a better quality parent instead of being the full-time quantity parent. As to your second part of your question, I'll just touch on it briefly. There does come a time when kids get older that it is actually impossible to tell them where they have to be. And if they have a preference, you can fight them on their preference, but that is an exercise in futility. There have been times where my kids wanted to spend, you know, a little bit more time with their dad. They wanted to stay over on Sunday instead of coming back on Sunday night because they found that like entry into school a little bit easier if they had spent the night there before, fine. And then there have been times, honestly, where, you know, they may have had a falling out with one of us, I won't say who, and wanted to like live full time at the other parent's house. You know, I've had my kids full time sometimes for 2 or 3 months at a stretch when circumstances have meant that that's the case. And the key to that, honestly, is just establishing with your ex that you guys are co-parents and understanding that it's not a competition who they want to spend time with, and it's not a competition who misses them more. The competition that you're really challenging each other to do is working together to make the most holistic experience for your kid possible, the most continuity possible. And the best way to do that continuity is to both love them and both feel like it's quality time that you're spending with them. So that's my advice on that.
I think that's so great. I don't have any experience personally in this area, but had the opportunity in law school to do some family law work, and thought that what is so interesting about this is so often like the missing piece in the legal stuff, which is the suffering of a loss and the needing to just suffer that loss. Like, you have lost something, and I think it's perfectly okay to grieve that and almost understand what the road ahead looks like, to understand that like each milestone you hit is going to be grief, because sort of the things that you all did together, whatever those traditions are going to look different this year. And it might not even be big things. I mean, just again, like not being there for certain things, or not having your child when you normally would have had them, or getting that report from them, or the first time like you have to hear something through your co-parent. Like, I think all of those are things that it's okay to feel grief over, and almost know that that grief is coming, but also saying like, okay, well, once you go through all of those once, like once a year has passed and you have done all of these things, not that it will never happen again, but now you have the opportunity to reestablish some of those norms and say like, okay, this is the new norm. And Rebecca, I love that you talked about like the freedom that comes with that, and how you can use that time to build, you know, a deeper relationship with your children, and also a deeper relationship with yourself, which of course is always good for your children as well. Jamila, how about you? Like, Rebecca, this is definitely more of your, you know, you're experiencing and living this.
Yeah, we've done this essentially Naima's whole life and just made the shift to a true 50-50, which there were certainly times where we had trended toward that just due to my schedule or something they had going on. There will come a time where hopefully you all will become so good at this that you can be flexible, that you can say, I need an extra day. Can I have an extra day? Or do you mind, you know, taking her tonight, even though that wasn't the plan, you know, and everybody can be fine and at peace with it. And I exercised that right today when I should not have, because I was feeling a little bit of mom guilt because I'm in the middle of this move. So I'm the only adult moving, which means I'm the only adult packing, aside from, you know, anyone I hired. Right. Only one not packing. In fact, the person that I hired from TaskRabbit did more packing than I have thus far. Anyway, Naima's dad and I had talked about it, and it's no big deal that over these 2 week period of me packing and us actually going over there, that he would take some extra days, you know, so I could have time, because I am also working in the middle of all this and keeping up with my doctor's appointments and stuff. So life doesn't stop because you're moving. Anyway, I felt bad that, you know, there had been maybe, say, three consecutive nights that Naima had been with her father. And then she came to me for a night and she was due to go right back and, you know, and spend most of the week with him. And so I said yesterday, you know, when he texted me, what time do you want to do, you know, handoff? You know, I was like, hey, you mind if she stays another night, you know, because I'm just missing my baby and I'll pack this weekend. I'm just missing my baby. And as a result of me keeping her today, I had to cancel a doctor's appointment that I forgot that I had. I forgot that there's a reason she's not here on Tuesdays because I've created a schedule for Tuesdays where I have all these things to do that I can't, you know, that are easier to do without her here. So all that to say, you will find a time where it's easier for your child not to be there, that you'll be relieved, you know, that you'll be tired and you'll be, you know, you won't be drowning your sorrows in wine and selling sunset. You will be toasting to the door closing behind your child's little feet. You will be running downstairs with a sweatshirt and no bra and the dustiest sweatpants, like in a way you swore you'd never let him see you like that. And you do not care because you want to get back to yourself. And it is a complicated way to parent. You know, parenting is complicated, period. You know, the older I get, the longer I'm doing this, and the more I talk to people who are married and have always been married to, you know, their child's parents, I can tell you that, like, there may be some different logistical challenges that come with doing a 50-50 situation. But, you know, you know this from experience. Like, it doesn't mean that your child is necessarily getting a better experience with their parents because they're both in the household, you know, and because they're seeing them each every day. And, you know, like, to go from ostensibly at some point your child saw the two of you all not terribly happy to be in this relationship and it now being over, that hopefully seeing you 50% of the time at your best, you know, feeling energized, feeling like you have the time to be present, to make those special family meals, like Rebecca said, to really enjoy what you all have together and to make it meaningful. It's not always going to be fun. You're still going to get, they're going to get on your nerves. They're going to make mistakes. They don't become a perfect child because you only have them half time, right? You feel like that at times, you know, like early on, it kind of did feel almost like the weekend dad phenomenon for me, even though it was 50% of the time, just kind of like everything is more glorious. All the stakes are higher. We have to go out to eat tonight. We have to do something fun. Everything has to be great because you don't have me all the time. And then eventually you look up and like that 50% of the time feels like 85% of the time.
Yeah. I have a thing that I'm just curious about too. I mean, Jamila, I thought about this a lot, especially, you know, it took a while before I actually told people how much I enjoyed not having my kids full time in terms of what I was able to both in my parenting relationship with them do, but also in my life do. I wonder how much of this angst is about feeling guilty about how people will see you because you're not with wanting to be with your kids all the time, or because you're not with your kids all the time, or because you're no longer the full-time mom. I do think there's something that comes with that. It can feel shameful when you say things like, you know, the secret benefit of divorce is that you have me time. Like, that's, it's okay. It may, it's different. I'm not saying it's better, but it's okay. It really, really is.
It is. And you don't have to apologize for it. You know, when you explain your situation to people, you don't have to, you know, make the caveat that this is what, you know, the courts ordered or he insisted or, you know, that you would have rather not had it this way. Like, it's totally fine. Mm-hmm. I think part of the reason I resisted the situation as long as I did was because I was, you know, dealing with the feeling of judgment. Like, what's wrong with you that you're not taking care of your child? You know, like, and if I'm using that time socially, like if I'm out partying, the assumption is like, you know, I'm feeling that people are thinking, you know, so you'd rather be at the club than with your baby, you know,
and
it's like sometimes, yeah, you know, like I can tell you who would definitely rather be at the club than with their baby. And that's all of my married friends, you know.
Yeah, you guys are selling this. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. Where's my free time? It doesn't.
You're going to be so happy.
Eventually.
You're going to be so happy. Eventually.
Embrace it.
Eventually. Hang in there.
Hang in there. It really does get good. It really good. I'm not even just going to say it gets better. It gets good. It gets good, letter writer.
Agreed.
All right. Thank you for your letter and good luck to you and your family. If there's anyone else who has a quandary they'd like for us to tackle, please send it our way via email at momanddad@slate.com. On to our second question, which is being read once again by Shasha Leonard.
Dear Mom and Dad are fighting. I have a 3-year-old boy who is going through quite a three-nager phase these days. I try to keep in mind that we haven't had a lot of social interaction since March, and I should expect his social skills to be a little lacking. But lately, when we FaceTime with my parents, he's just completely rude. Putting up his hand in front of the camera, trying to hang up, telling me to hang up, hiding, yelling no, and refusing to say hello. How do I teach him that this is rude and it's important to be polite? I never expect him to hug or kiss in person because I want him to understand consent and bodily autonomy. I also try not to say that grandparents will be sad if he doesn't say hello because I don't want to make him responsible for the emotions of adults. Although my parents do sometimes creep into this territory a bit more than I would like. But I do want him to know that it's rude to just yell no when someone says hello to him. Where is the line between teaching good manners and not being afraid to offend someone if needed? I feel like my generation was taught to be polite to a fault and can be too worried about being rude or causing awkwardness to speak up for themselves or others. Am I overthinking this, or do I just need to let go of my embarrassment over his behavior? I'd love to hear what rules regarding manners you have used with your kids and how you enforce them. Thank you.
I obviously have a three-nager who's heading to the fuck you fours. I feel for this letter writer so much. I have found, though, that like the moment that all this is happening in Zoom is not the moment to necessarily teach manners. Montessori has this concept of like grace and courtesy. And I really like that because it doesn't, sometimes I think manners tend to be like an obedience concept, like you need to do this. And I guess instead, what I want the kids to know how to do is sort of gracefully suggest their will to people. So like not forcing them to talk on Zoom, but like my expectation is that you will say hi and know how to say, I'm not feeling like talking today, or I'm not going to talk today, as opposed to like, you know, slapping the screen or whatever is happening. So,
or yelling no.
Or just yelling no. Yes. Yeah, exactly. I lay out the expectation like before we get on a call or before we're going to do an activity. So I will, one, use it like in role play, like when they want to use the camera or I'm on the iPad or something, say like, okay, well, this is, you know, my expectation is that you would say hi and to whoever's on the phone if you know them, or just say hi to the person that you see on the screen. But if you don't want to talk, this is, you know, how we can excuse ourselves from the conversation. And then I always remind them right before we get on the call. So I will say, you know, like, grandma and grandpa are about to call. Remember, you don't have to talk to them. But I do expect that if you're in the room that you will come say hi. You know, if you don't want to talk, you'll say, I don't feel like talking, or I'm playing, I'm busy, however you want that to be. So like laying out those expectations and modeling that behavior for them. And then we also like role play these ideas when I'm playing with them. If they are doing something and the reaction is kind of rude, I will just say like, okay, well, we could have used, you know, grace in that concept. So instead of just slamming the door, or, you know, in the Peppa Pig case that we talked about, slamming the phone down, to be able to say like, you know, well, that's great that you can whistle. You're hurting my feelings. I have to go. Something to that effect to convey that information so that you're not saying you have to sit here and engage with these people, because I think that is a choice that you want to give your child, but you also can expect them not to, you know, just scream no into the camera. Like if that's the rule, you can remind them we're not going to scream no. I think the second thing here is about kind of Zoom specific stuff. When we're in person, there's some kind of, you know, force that helps, I think, a little bit the social pressure. I just find my 3-year-old is like slightly better behaved in person with people than over Zoom. It's like the screen, the space that gives them is they know that they have the power. There's like nothing this other person can do, because they can run around. So I do just try to set up reasonable expectations for my parents as well, or, you know, Jeff's parents, like, hey, he's 3. He doesn't really want to sit around and answer your questions necessarily. But if you wanted to read him a book, or if you had a puppet or some kind of stuffed animal that you have there, like those are the things he's engaged by. So I do think in this case, it's kind of a two-way street. Like you should be teaching them some expectations, which I think takes forever for a 3-year-old to learn. I don't know. I have 2 older ones that seem to be doing okay, but Teddy, the 3-year-old, is just very hard-headed. But also having your parents have reasonable expectations. That, you know, this isn't exactly the best way to be interacting with a 3-year-old. What do you guys think?
I've had like so much like, I guess it's not going to be secret anymore, secret schadenfreude over the last 6 months. Anyone who listened to me when I was in this podcast knows that I was always the parent who we get questions about screen time and I would be like, can you please stop obsessing about fucking screen time? It's not important. Like some kids develop issues when they have no screens and some kids are fine when they watch TV for 15 hours a day. Can you just calm down? And I just keep thinking like, what are you doing now, people, with this screen time thing? Like, it's the only way to talk to grandma.
Well.
If only your child knew what a screen was. anyway, now that I've gotten that out, I think you are setting your kid up to fail here in like a couple of different ways. One is that you are expecting your kid to sit in front of a screen and realize that the people on the other side are human beings with feelings when your three-year-old literally sees them as images, as if they're on camera. Like, yes, a three-year-old can have empathy, but a three-year-old does not quite have a sort of self-actualized feeling to realize that other human beings have the same interiority that they do, right? So in order for you to expect that, you know, your three-year-old will act any differently with their grandparents on the screen as they might when they're watching, I don't know, a laser battle on the screen is just not fair. It feels like setting them up for failure. So I like what what Elizabeth said is give your kid an out. Say, you know, if you don't want to do this, that's fine, but can I do it? Like, I'm going to do it. So either you don't participate, but really don't participate. Or if you're going to participate, I'm just going to ask you to just say hi and then you can leave. Like, lower the pressure on your kid. And I do think that your parents really, it would really help often if older people were more understanding about how challenging it is to get young people to want to talk to them. Yes. It really would. I mean, it's like, I really think that parents sometimes do a better job of saying like, hey, mom, here's the thing. When you were three, I promise you would not have been able to deal with the situation. It's not personal. My kid's not rude. He's three. There are a million ways you can do manners. I always did age-appropriate manner stuff. Table manners, please and thank you, were always very important to me and my kids. But those are, again, in-person activities that are easy to practice. Yeah. This is a difficult skill to practice. I'd say lower the pressure a little bit and understand that the situation as it's being presented is one where your child pretty much can only fail. So game it out so he has a chance of succeeding and start from there.
I think that's a really good point, Rebecca, that you need to be level setting with your parents if you haven't. And I don't know if your parents are as upset about your child's behavior as you are, or if you're just feeling bad because you want them to have quality time with their grandbaby. And that's pretty difficult to achieve via Zoom. Three-year-olds are not great people. You know, they are lovely. I mean, they're adorable and sweet and funny and kind, but in terms of social skills, they don't treat the world around them super well because they don't know how to yet, right? And that's okay. They're zany. They're like 90s stand-up comics, right? They're like, hoo-ah, hey, oh, you know, like, you can't expect that person is going to give you a good performance at the dinner table, let alone via video chat. But one thing that you might want to consider doing is say if there's a song that your kid likes to sing or a dance that they like to do or, you know, something that they can do really quickly that your parents can see, right? So if he's obsessed with singing the Itsy Bitsy Spider, you kick off the Itsy Bitsy Spider for the grandparents and they get to soak in that adorable sweetness and he gets to move on with his day and you all can continue your chat or you can talk to them at another time. You also might want to just capture some footage of him in his natural habitat and share that with them as opposed to trying to actually have conversations. You know, I'm sure he's a lot more charming and funny and sweet when he's with you all under normal circumstances, at least maybe 20% of the time than he is when he's trying to talk to people via a device, people that he may not be entirely clear on the existence of at this point, because at once they were real flesh and blood people, and now they're TV characters who live inside of the phone or the computer.
Jamila, I love that idea because I, we actually, as you're saying that, I'm like, oh my gosh, we kind of do this in using like video, like we send a video clip of something, you know, Teddy's doing to my parents, and then they send a video clip back, which Teddy also likes because he can watch it 4 or 5 times, you know, the way he mm-hmm. does like his favorite show. And again, he can watch the thing he made and we can say, yep. you know, praise him on like, look, you showed grandma's, you know, this toy you have that you love, like praise that way because you have so much more control. And you're right. Like it treats it more like a show, something consumable, and you can show them at a moment that you know they can take it in, you know, when they're already sitting or when you would already be doing something, as opposed to, I mean, both of you are right that like 3-year-olds are just not capable. Like you've interrupted their playtime to like make them do this activity that they don't want to do and they don't really understand. And it looks like TV, but it's not TV, right? Rebecca, well summarized with, like, you are just going to fail at this. Yes.
Well, like some like thirsty old people on a screen is not compelling for a 3-year-old.
You know, children haven't yet realized that we spend the majority of our time doing things that we would not choose to do. Right. Like yeah. they're like, what Correct. Do you mean? Mom wants to cook dinner. She wants to wash the car. She wants to, you know what I mean? Like all those awful things that you do that they don't have to do. They're like, you chose that. I chose watching Peppa Pig, playing, rolling down the stairs, all these great things that I chose. I did not choose thirsty old people inside of your phone. And over time, I'll say, because Naima was all, like, we always lived across the country from, you know, we always lived far from my parents. So even though they would come to visit and vice versa, like we went long stretches of time, you know, without seeing each other relative to folks that live in the same town. So I've been taking video and photo for her whole life. And now she's at the point where she'll say, like, she'll request it, like, capture this and send it to, and she'll, you know, mention which family member she wants to humbly bestow her presence upon, who is worthy of this snapshot of her posing outside of Trader Joe's. Is it grandma? Is it grandpa? Yes. Who knows?
I often now offload the 8-year-old to the grandparents, right? Like he wants to talk ad nauseum about, you know, whatever, Pokemon. And I'm like, you know who would love to hear this? Your grandpa. Call him because I can't hear it anymore.
That's a good strategy. Yeah, good strategy. I'll say like by 5, maybe by 4, like I could put her on FaceTime. There was a good golden time. Now it's like I'll do it and I come back and she's like playing games like while she has them paused on FaceTime, like she's halfway talking to them. But like there was a good moment where like I was able to give her the phone or the iPad and let her FaceTime with my parents or, you know, one of my sisters, and like I could have a break. You know, like I could be cooking dinner and she would just talk, talk, talk. So you'll get there. It's just not at 3, and that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, letter writer. We wish you all the best with your 3-nager and their little attitude. Eventually they'll come to know that yelling, by the way, like I do wish that we had video of the yelling no, because I'm wondering if it's just like, it's like, hey, Timmy, yeah, come say hi to your grandparents. No. Or if it's like, hello, Timmy. No. I think it's that,
it's that one. I promise it's that one.
Good luck. Good luck, listener. Good luck to you and your little person. Please keep us posted. And for other listeners who may have a conundrum or a 3-nager who needs to be tamed, please send in your questions or thoughts to momanddad@slate.com or leave a note for us on our Facebook page. Just search for Slate Parenting. Before we get out of here, we're going to do recommendations. Elizabeth, what do you have for us this week?
Okay, so I am recommending that if you have any kind of like fancy dishes, fancy glassware, and you have not yet during this pandemic gotten them out and used them, do it. We move all the time, and I was moving this like china that I had received around. And so when we moved into this house, I just put it out to use. And it's amazing and it's super fun. And we did a poetry tea time the other day and I posted on Instagram and people were like crazy that I was using this really nice china with the kids. But I think it is great. And if I was storing it and, you know, it was going to break anyway, I just feel like it makes me feel special. It's super fun. I don't give it to the kids all the time. Jeff and I eat off of it very frequently, but it's just like a fun thing to use the stuff that you have. And the kids think it's really cool when they get to use a teacup or one of the small plates or something. So if you have anything like that, that you have sitting around in storage, or you're just too afraid to use, just like use it. It feels really nice and special and fun, and the kids will think it's fun. Or if you don't have kids, I love drinking my coffee in the morning out of like one of our really fancy, way too small teacups that I have to fill 20 times. But it makes me feel special. And I think moments like that now are few and far between. So that's my recommendation. Use your fancy dishes.
That is a great one. I've been doing that with like beauty products and stuff, I've noticed. Like,
yeah, that too. Whatever you had stored away, just use it.
Use your stuff. What do you have for us, Rebecca?
I'm actually going to change my recommendation because of what Elizabeth just said, because I'm inspired to share something like that that we're doing. I was going to recommend the Danish political show Borgen on Netflix for adults. I'm going to put that aside. Watch it. The thing I'm going to recommend for real, though, is to use cloth napkins, something that we started doing like probably a year or so before the pandemic, but the pandemic has just highlighted how great cloth napkins are. We have like one particular cloth napkin we have, and I bought like a whole bunch of the same kind. The great thing about cloth napkins is everyone thinks if you're American, like you use it once and you have to wash it. No, the way it's supposed to work, the way it works the rest of the world, everyone sits at the same place at dinner every night. Everyone uses the same napkin until it gets stained, until it gets dirty. And then you wash it. And then you take one out of the rotation of 20 because you're going to buy a bunch that are the same and stick it in that place. They work better. They feel fancier. You can leave them on your table all the time. So it always looks like, you know, you're going to sit down for a meal. So it kind of incentivizes you to actually go to your real table and sit down and eat because there's this thing there waiting for you that is like kind of posh. I'm really embracing the cloth napkin lifestyle. We're doing so much more laundry now anyway. So why not throw some cloth napkins into the rotation? Use them. I promise you'll like them as long as they're not white and as long as you buy a whole lot of the same kind so that you can just swap them out and put a new one in the rotation.
I love this. We got a variety pack, like probably at Amazon, right? But had all different, it was like rainbow colors. And so everybody has their color for the week or until they stain or, you know, whatever. And it's so fun. I agree. I think that's a great recommendation.
That is a very good recommendation. Use your things. Use all your good, beautiful things because you don't... One day you could be packing them up and realize that you've moved them from apartment to apartment without touching them. You are essentially a storage system for nice things that are going to waste. So use them. Okay, so I am going to recommend Celestial Seasonings Lemon Lavender Lane Tea. I am obsessed with lavender tea. I love lavender, period. I want to smell like lavender. I want to taste lavender. I just want lavender all around me. And so I'd gotten Celestial Seasonings Sleepy Time Lavender Tea a couple months ago, which was really good. And I was trying to find some more and couldn't, but I instead stumbled upon Lemon Lavender Lane. And it is just like a little bit of springtime in a cup. It's not too lemony. I don't like super lemony tea. Just a little bit of lemon and a good amount of lavender. It tastes great with honey. It tastes great without. I'm sure you could do agave nectar. I've tried it with equals. Good. It's lovely.
Ordering it right now. See that? Ordering it right now.
That's how it works.
So you need your lemon lavender lane tea. Mm-hmm. Fancy teacup.
Yes.
Your pretty napkin.
Pretty napkin.
And you'll have a little bit of alone time. That is what we are recommending.
Go do it.
Selling Sunset.
Selling Sunset.
And Borgen.
And.
Yes, and watch Borgen. There we go.
Yes, and watch Borgen. And go back a few weeks to the key lime pie recommendation. I appreciate that a few of you all have tagged me on Facebook and Twitter that you made key lime pie. Rebecca, I recommended key lime pie and making it yourself a month or so ago.
But like the simplest version, like very simple. Yep. Anyone can do it.
Yes.
All right. I'll look that up.
So you have that with your tea on your nice china with your lovely cloth napkins and pamper yourself while you're not parenting. It's my favorite thing to do. That is another episode of Mom and Dad Are Fighting. Again, if you would like for us to answer one of your questions, or if you just have some thoughts to share, nice ones, of course, send us an email at momanddad@slate.com or post to the Slate Facebook group. Just search for Slate Parenting. Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson. For Elizabeth Newcamp and Rebecca Lavoie, I'm Jamila Lemieux.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.